and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio, the political podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types from a left-wing perspective. It is Saturday, July 8th, 2017. First of all, we apologize profusely for not bringing you a new episode last week.
Yes.
We had a combination of technical issues and geographical issues and psychiatric issues and metaphysical issues.
It's very disappointing, and I apologize.
Yep, so sorry about that, but we're back today, and oh boy, do we have stuff to talk about.
Yes.
Where do you want to start, Rach?
All right, so I'm going to start with something, and I know it's ridiculous. That's why we're going to talk about it. I'm just going to read to you from, this is an article from the Denver Post. So This is like the sort of premier newspaper in Colorado.
It's a great paper, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a serious paper. This isn't a joke. This is a thing that exists. The headline is, "These Coloradans think the Earth is flat."
Oh, flat earthers.
"And gravity's a hoax. Now they're being persecuted."
They're being persecuted. Are we burning them at the stake as heretics?
"Every Tuesday at 6 p.m., 36 Coloradans from every corner of the state assemble in the windowless back room of a small Fort Collins coffee shop." Fort Collins is my hometown.
Uh-huh.
"They have met 16 times since March, most nights talking through the ins and outs of their shared faith until the owners kick them out at closing. They have no leaders, no formal hierarchy, and no enforced ideology, save a common quest for answers to their questions about the stars. Their membership has slowly swelled in the past 3 years, though persecution and widespread public derision keep them mostly underground. Many use pseudonyms or only give first names. Quote, they just do not want to talk about it for fear of reprisals or ridicule from coworkers," says John Vanook, the group's founder who lives in Fort Collins.
Wait, I thought they weren't using names.
Yes, some of them.
Okay.
Three of them in this article use their actual names.
Three out of the, like, five?
16. "He's at the epicenter of a budding movement, one that's coming for your books, movies, God, and mind. They're thousands strong, perhaps one in every 500, and have proponents at the highest levels of science, sports, journalism, and arts."
Hold on a second. One in every 500 of what?
Perhaps. That's their claim. One in every 500 people are flat earthers is their claim.
Uh-huh.
"Anyway, they call themselves flat earthers because they believe Earth, the blue, majestic, spinning orb of life, is flat as a table." "And they want you to know, because it's 2017. Quote, this is a new awakening, Vanook says with a spark in his earth blue eyes. Some will accept it, some won't. But love it or hate it, you can't ignore flat earth. The Fort Collins group, mostly white, mostly male, college-aged to septuagenarian, touts itself as the first community of flat earthers in the United States.
I don't think that's true.
Sister groups have spawned since in Boston, New York, Houston, Philadelphia, Phoenix, and Chicago. In Colorado, Ptolemaic, is that right?
Yeah.
Science revivalists have lofty ambitions, raising $6,000 to put up a billboard along I-25, which is the main thoroughfare in Colorado.
That's awesome. I really hope they do that.
Oh my God, right? Broadcasting their worldview. A GoFundMe site quickly raised more than $400, but has recently stalled.
Oh.
Anyone can contribute funds or submit billboard ideas, and the group has promised $100 to the winning submitter.
Cool.
Quote, this is not something you can force down others' throats, Vanook says. They have come to it on their own journey. A billboard is a non-aggressive way to introduce people to the idea. Parenthetical by the Denver Post. All scientists and educators consulted for this story rejected the idea of a flat earth.
Did they?
At the Tuesday night meetup dubbed Flat Earth or Other Forbidden Topics, believers invite fellow adherents to open discussions in which the like-minded confirm one another's hunches and laugh at the folly of those still stuck in the Enlightenment. I love how snarky this article is. Quote, there's so much evidence once you've set aside your pre-programmed learning and begin to look at things objectively with a critical eye, says Bob Nodal, a Denver resident and featured guest at a recent Tuesday meeting. You learn soon that what you're taught is mainly propaganda. Yeah, science, just propaganda. Nodal worked for 35 years as an engineer and now runs the popular YouTube channel Globebusters, which has nearly 2 million views across more than 135 videos. Quote, I've researched conspiracies for a long time, he says. I've looked very critically at NASA. Why is it that astronauts have conflicting stories about the sky? Is it bright with stars or a deep velvet black? Trav, why do they have such conflicting stories about the sky?
Yeah, I don't know.
His wife, Cammie, shares his views, which is heartening.
Yeah, that would be an awkward home situation if they have divergent views on whether the Earth was flat or not.
Our YouTube channel gets people to critically think, she said to the Fort Collins Group. Quote, the heliocentric model says that we're, this is amazing, says that we're spinning at 1,038 miles per hour. They say you won't notice because it's continual motion, but you should be able to feel it. You shouldn't be able to function allegedly spinning that fast, says Cammie.
So, like, in an airplane, why don't you fly to the back of the plane and stick to the,
how
to the rear
you,
of, the,
how can
of,
you
the,
possibly?
Of the cabin?
Yeah.
Because you're going 600 miles an hour.
You can't. You should not be able to function going
no,
that fast.
No, you should be, you'd be you should be stuck to the back of the plane
with
your
face and just,
back.
It's really, yeah, it'd be, it's horrific when you're on a plane. You should just not be able to function going that fast.
Should just make you unconscious immediately.
The weekly meetups also give forum to friendly lines of questioning. Some are straightforward, quote, what do you say back to people who call you stupid? And some in a ready-made answer, quote, you're not stupid, period. They have to understand
oh,
that there
good.
Are deceptions going on at enormous levels.
Yeah, it's a big
Others
conspiracy.
Even stump the experts. Quote, how are we flat earthers supposed to explain to our friends the solar eclipse in August? Ask one attendee. The room fell silent. We'll have to do more research and get back to you on that.
Oh, come on!
That research tends to fall on the shoulders of movement leaders, many of whom have backgrounds in related fields. Mark Sargent is the father of Flat Earth organizing in the United States. He worked as a software analyst in Boulder for 20 years before relocating to Seattle, where he sets up Flat Earth meetups through YouTube. His channel has amassed 7.7 million video views and almost 40,000 regular subscribers. Like nearly every other member of the movement, Sargent converted to Flat Earthism late in life. Mm-hmm. For most of his first five decades, he believed the Earth to be a spinning globe. Mm-hmm. But something changed around the summer of 2014 when he stumbled upon a YouTube video contending that the Earth is flat.
How always the YouTube videos.
Mm-hmm. Quote, it was interesting, but I didn't think it was real. I started the same way everyone else, saying, oh, I'll just prove the Earth is round. 9 months later, I was staring at my computer thinking, I can't prove the globe anymore.
Hmm.
If he can't prove it, I mean, must be bullshit.
Yeah.
He remembers the date, February 10th, 2015, when he took the plunge and started creating Flat Earth content of his own. To his surprise, the daily videos he had begun churning out ignited a firestorm online. The 49-year-old now devotes himself entirely to Flat Earth propagation. He's made 600 YouTube videos and has been interviewed more than 120 times. His conversion to the cult of globe-busting follows a common pattern among proselytes. Latent anti-authoritarianism, which first found outlet in popular conspiracy theories of the mid-aughts, that by the mid-2010s transformed into full-blown contempt for the global model. In most cases, the catalyst was YouTube, with its highly popular Flat Earth videos that began proliferating in late 2014. Sargent acknowledges he didn't found Flat Earthism, which has existed in some forms since antiquity.
Yes.
But he and a handful of others combined communications technology with old-fashioned salesmanship to grow a shambolic rump of mostly silent believers in a fledgling movement that spans the country. Quote, before I did the first few videos back in 2015, if you typed Flat Earth into YouTube, you'd get 50,000 results. Now you'll come in with 17.4 million. That's a 30,000% increase, and we're growing. The Centennial State, which is Colorado, has been the cradle of the American Flat Earth Renaissance since birth. The first Flat Earth International Conference, which will be in Raleigh, North Carolina in November, features a number of Colorado-based Flat Earthers, including Sargent, Nodal, and Matthew Priscilla, or as he is a pseudonym, I guess, Odd Reality, a Denver-based rapper and YouTuber with 75,000 subscribers and nearly 7 million video views. The movement, though, is not a monolith. Differences of opinion divide the community on matters of scientific interpretation, cosmology, strategy, and even the most fundamental question of geology, such as, what is the shape of our planet?
Uh-huh.
Many subscribe to the, quote, ice wall theory, the belief that the Earth is circumscribed by giant ice barriers like the walls of a bowl, and that they extend infinitely along a flat plane. Sargent
and
envisions...
And Jon Snow is there
And Jon Snow's...
It?
Yeah, watchers on the wall. Sargent envisions Earth as a giant circular disk covered by a dome. He likens the planet to a snow globe, similar to the one depicted in The Truman Show, a fictitious 1998 existential drama.
Yeah, I remember that stupid movie.
What then lies on the other side of the ice walls or beyond the glassy dome enclosing our world? Flat Earthers don't claim to know with certainty.
It sounds like Dark City.
Yeah.
Much more like Dark City.
Right, yeah. Right, yes. They don't claim to know what's on the outside of Earth. instead paying lip service to, quote, common sense evidence they claim can be proved.
Okay.
When skeptics demand proof, though, flat earthers wield reams of figures from so-called curvature tests and gyroscopic calibrations that seem to buttress their views.
Mm-hmm.
Leaders want flat earthism to be an accessible creed for the common man, an egalitarian movement that gives life meaning by punching back at scientific disenchantment.
Okay.
Quote, they want you to think you're insignificant, a speck on the earth, a cosmic mistake, Sargent says. The flat earth says that you're special. We are special. There's a creator, and this isn't some accident.
So why couldn't the creator create a globe? Why did the creator have to create a snow globe?
I don't know. They don't know either.
Okay.
Their orthodox says faith makes them a persecuted minority, mocked to their faces by friends and strangers for nothing more than First Amendment-protected beliefs. Quote, we are accused of being idiots, of doing it for money. Believe me, there's only humiliation in this.
Yeah, that's our First Amendment right, too.
To call them idiots. This is my favorite part, though. Why is everyone telling us that the Earth is round if it's not? What's the end game here?
Something with the corporations, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He and other flat earthers can only speculate why the global conspiracy has had such staying power for more than 500 years, or why the, quote, top... the uber-elite heads of government, universities, and major corporations that allegedly know the truth would continue to uphold a scheme that offers little in the way of riches or strategic power. It's not about money. They want complete mind control, Nodal says after the meeting in the lobby of the Fort Collins coffee shop. They want to create two classes, the ultra-rich and servants. At that point, they would have taken over the world and enslaved the population and controlled everything. Until that dour day, billboards will be fundraised, meetups will be organized, and the world will keep on spinning, or not. So that's a serious article with serious people that are actually meeting in my hometown an hour away from where we are right now.
Can I do a science diatribe now?
Yes, please.
Okay. So we're at an interesting time where...
Yeah.
I mean, it's always kind of been this way. I mean, first of all, the flat earthers, these guys think like, oh, we kind of started the new flat earth movement. The flat earth movement has been around forever.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the earliest days of the internet, it was fun to look at the flat earth websites because it was like, oh, hey, look at these crazy people.
Mm-hmm.
And that was back in like 1999,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And all these people, like there's a group in California and there's a group in New Mexico and there's a group in the East Coast, and they all say like, we're the Judean people's front, you know, splitters. Yeah. So they're like that. And we're in this age now where any sort of scientific consensus, it's become fashionable, especially for white men.
Yes.
It would seem, or white people, at least in general.
According to this article, it's mostly white men.
Yeah. To lump in scientific consensus with this overall idea of a oppressive hierarchy of elites and corporate leaders and bankers, and it's like it's all sort of morphed into the same idea, and out of this has spawned things like flat earth and anti-vaxxers and climate denial, and well, climate denial comes from a much more actually corporate driven movement.
Yeah.
So,
but when it trickles down to the common man, it's very much lumped in with the same sort of science is for elitists and we aren't elitists and they're all lying to us because they want control over our minds. And so we're going to find the real truth, which is that all these scientists are, I don't know, like you're a scientist.
Yeah.
Dana's a scientist.
Right.
You're just people that...
Well, talking about the Earth for a second, you know, it's interesting, especially if you study, the beginnings of astrophysics and geology. And basically, the guy who more or less put to bed and explained in a very simple and elegant way that the Earth was round was Galileo.
Yes.
And he did a very simple experiment that most laymen can pretty easily understand. What he did was he took measurements of shadows at a certain time of day from different points fairly nearby, but far enough to where he estimated what the curvature of the Earth probably was, that these shadows would appear at these angles at this time of day. And he was spot on, basically. And the only way that this could be was if the Earth was curved. It's really that simple.
Yeah.
Like, there was no other... good explanation for it. He drew it out very, very easily to understand, very concisely, and you know, that's essentially how he proved it, and it made sense. And, you know, of course, he was branded a heretic for this and a bunch of other things. And be that as it may.
Yeah, he was housebound. And,
But it was a simple, elegant solution.
He also did something with, like, a very early-day telescope, right?
Yeah.
He looked at, like, a certain star and where it was at a certain point in time, and then, you know, a day later where it was, and sort of in relation to where he was and that whole thing.
Right. Well, that had to do more with his his heliocentric theories.
Right, right. Okay.
Yeah, because...
Yeah. The Earth is not the center of the universe.
Right, because the early Ptolemy idea was this Earth-centric, where the planets... He laid it out and explained it. It's actually much more complicated than it really is, and it sort of worked with his theory, but it made a lot more sense. And there were certain things Ptolemy could not
explain,
like the movement of the stars and, you know, things like that. And then Galileo did. And
Galileo's.
Well, I mean, Copernicus first.
Right.
Copernicus left a lot of gaps, though.
Yes.
And Galileo filled a lot of them in. And anyway, the point is, here's the thing about human audacity of the understanding of the world around us. And this doesn't even get into the really complicated stuff, like when you get into quantum physics and quarks stuff that will blow your mind, even if you're really, really, really smart.
Yes.
the human Earth audacity. And space and physics and light and all these wonderful things. It's interesting. We have the capacity to kind of understand a lot of it with our advanced brains.
Yes.
But empirical observation alone leaves a lot out.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to understand the limits of human understanding. Let's go back to Galileo's time, right? We didn't have airplanes. We didn't have satellites.
No.
We didn't. So if you get up and you look out on the horizon, what you essentially see is an endless flat plane. So that's what you know. So that's what makes sense.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But science does is it seeks to know more.
Right.
It seeks to find answers, even if the answers aren't what you thought they would be.
Right.
And
even if it works against sort of your empirical logic.
Right. Your hypothesis.
Yes.
Your hypothesis, if proven wrong, that's still science.
As humans, that's what we do. We try to understand the world. And
as scientists.
Right. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, see, when I grew up, the scientific method, and maybe it was the school I went to, the scientific method was drilled into our head.
Oh, me too.
From fifth to eighth grade nonstop.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And somewhere along the line, we stopped doing that, or it wasn't as important.
I don't know.
So now you have an entire generation of people who misunderstand, like, very basic concepts like correlation versus causation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I always use this example. If you go to your neighbor and you say one out of every three men who drink tap water the first 50 years of their life will develop cancer,
right?
There's a chance. What are they going to drink Evian from now on? Maybe. Anyway, you're not wrong. But the part you left out was that one in three men in their lifetime will develop cancer.
Right.
So is there a correlation? Technically, yes, because everybody drinks tap water.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Or if
most people.
Yeah, most people.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then does that prove causation? Absolutely not. And that's where we get into the people like with the vaccines and autism.
Right.
Well, my kid got vaccines.
And then he's autistic.
Right.
Okay.
See, that's this one and one must equal derp.
Yeah. You can't just pick random things and then decide that that's the cause of something.
Mm-hmm.
Science is important. And I think the thing that I want to get back to is the conspiracy theorists seem to be very scientist-centric. Are we going back to the days of scientists are like these powerful men in white coats in dark rooms doing things that you don't understand to convince? I mean, scientists are literally just people you know. You're a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
There's everyone, like, I know so many people who would be considered scientists. They're just people who research things and then try to prove them using empirical data.
Yes.
And
not empirical data.
I'm sorry. Using research data, using there's a variety
data
of kinds of data that you can use.
And,
yes.
Yeah.
to try to prove or disprove or just find out about the world. This is not like some sort of band of Illuminati people deciding thing. It's just...
Now, look, once in a while, there are scientists who cook the books, who manipulate data.
Mm-hmm. But
who
also,
don't
science
use the proper scientific
peer-reviewed,
method.
And people, once you produce something, people peer-review it, meaning other scientists look at it. They try to reproduce the same thing that you produce prove
those
that...
Those are the ones that are the most valuable.
Yeah.
That are the most worth it.
Right. If you do something and you prove something, and then people look at what you did and they say, that seems pretty valid, somebody else is going
to
try to
reproduce
what you did. And if they can... And then other people review that data.
Then it lends more credence to your findings.
That's how science works. This is a community of people who are a little bit competitive, to be fair, but also very much all with the same purpose,
mm-hmm.
which is science is important and the scientific method is important. And so this notion that, like, it's these cultural elites who are trying to brainwash you is just nonsense.
Well, and it's very sad that science has itself has become a
polarizing
liberal
thing.
My
dad literally said to me, like, well, science is made by men, because of course it's not women, but and men are inherently, you know, going to skew things to their own political perspective. And I said, that's not how science
That's exactly not how science
works. He's like, well, but it's just people. And so they're going to do what they're going to do. And they're all on the same team. And I'm like, they're not all on this. It's not how it works. My dad literally thinks like science is a political thing. Scientists are liberals and they're going to tell you what they want you to think and he's not going to buy it.
Right.
So you can't even...
Well, that's grown out of like the... Really, a lot of that is grown out of the whole climate change.
It is, absolutely.
Issue where Republicans got in bed with the oil and gas lobby and created a narrative to keep the oil money flowing.
Yes.
And... that has now skewed and become hyperpartisan.
Yes. And it's dangerous.
It's extraordinarily dangerous.
Because
and this is, again, this is what I worry about the anti-vaxxer movement. As we said it again and again, this was a movement, the current movement, mostly born out of other liberals.
Yes.
But now it's starting to take some foothold in conservative circles, and that scares me because those people can be very dogmatic.
Yes.
And that's where it could really explode and become disastrous.
Yeah. It also makes me think, like, I was reading this article before we started the podcast, and I just thought, like, oh, well, this is the way Trump got elected. This kind of willful, bratty, sort of willful ignorance.
Mindless, jingoistic.
Mindless, yep. I just don't like the people in charge. They don't know anything, and I'm going to prove it, and God damn it, everybody's like, ugh! That's why.
No, and nobody's speaking up for me, the white middle-class guy.
Yeah. We're going to get into some Trump stuff later, but anyway, I couldn't.
Well, it's an interesting way to kick off this episode before we get to events of the day, and there are a lot. First, let's talk about where the healthcare bill stands.
Okay.
So, you know, as you know, they did not sneak a vote in before the holiday.
No.
Which means everybody got to go home and get an earful from their constituents.
Most of them did not hold town halls.
Well, a few did, but even if they didn't hold town halls, like, we found them.
Yes.
We found them at the parades or at their whatevers.
Yes.
And they got an earful.
Yeah, they did.
And right now...
And more. Protests, die-ins, all kinds of things. Yeah.
Right now, it's a goddamn mess. Here's a couple things that happened. Before the break, and McConnell realized he wasn't going to have the votes, and the CBO score was a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
The idea was floated that... was it by Rand Paul? I don't know. Somebody was like, well... You know, why don't we think about maybe just repealing and then replacing later?
Yeah.
And Mitch McConnell was like, no fucking way. No, that's not what's happening. And even Trump, just to show you just how mindless and disorganized and unprepared this guy is, actually seemed to support that, where his whole thing was like, we can't do that. And now he's like, well, maybe we can. And it's just like you just want to slap your forehead and say, these people have no plan. They have no idea what they're doing.
They don't know how to govern.
They don't know how to govern. And they're holding the fate of all our healthcare and our lives and our health in their hands, and they're completely, they have no plan.
No, they're completely, completely hapless. Disorganized. They don't know what they're doing, and it seems to be all about politics.
It's not even about current politics.
No.
It's all about, well, we've been harping on repealing Obamacare for so long, and now we have the ability to do it. We can't just not do it. We better think of something.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I'm sure they knew, and they didn't expect to be in this position. They don't know what to do with it now. Is, oh shit, now we actually have to try to do it.
But we don't have any plan. No. We don't know how to do it because we never really thought about it. We voted to repeal Obamacare, 54 times or something, right, in the House? But we actually didn't, have a plan.
So their first volley at it was, well, we're going to do this really cynical tax cut bill for rich people.
And then, yes.
And yes. We're gonna give you some bullshit about freedom of choice and some gobbledygook about lower premiums. And then the CBO came back and said, actually, everybody's premium's going to go up and 25 million people are going to lose their insurance and it's all going to suck. And they tried to spin that and they really couldn't spin it. And then even what they call moderate Republicans, they're not actually moderate. They're just kind of pragmatic.
Right.
Conservative Republicans.
They don't want to not get reelected.
Yeah. Right. Their seats aren't all that safe.
All right, so then their next plan was, let's attack the Democrats.
Well, that's always the plan.
But I want to read to you what Hillary Clinton said, because I love her so much.
Okay.
So, let's see. The GOP decided that they should attack Hillary, because they have to have a boogeyman.
Well, I thought Nancy Pelosi was the only effective boogeyman.
Right.
Why are they even talking about Hillary Clinton?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Or Elizabeth Warren.
No, it's all Nancy Pelosi.
All of it, of course.
Yeah.
Our healthcare system is collapsing, but Democrats refuse to bring anything to the table. Where's their plan? We've got to fix what's broken. Where's your plan, at Hillary Clinton, they say on Twitter. Hours later, Clinton fired back, tweeting a link to her campaign website, on which she outlined a plan to expand the Affordable Care Act, reduce out-of-pocket health care and prescription drug costs, among other things. She says, quote, this is her tweet, right here, includes radical provisions like how not to kick 23 people off their coverage. Feel free to run with it. And then a literal link to her campaign website where she outlines with detailed policy how to fucking fix health care. It's glorious. And literally, they should just go to her website, download that plan, and fucking do it.
Well, I'm
and that
sure,
would be much... Literally, but feel free to run with
I think
it. That
more,
is beautiful
I,
from her.
I'm sure more than a few Senate aides probably did, and they're just trying to tweak some words here and there. And
but isn't that funny? She's funny.
It's also depressing.
It's very depressing.
Yeah.
Because what we could have had
assuming we had a Democratic Senate, too. Yeah.
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 Anyway, I just thought that was funny.
So, in any event... but there's no difference between Trump and Hillary, something, something Wall Street, something, something warmonger.
Something emails.
Something emails.
Benghazi? I don't know.
Wall Street.
She made a speech, Travis, and she got paid for it. Why can't we see the text of her speech?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She probably talked about the sex slaves on the Mars colony.
Yeah.
Are we going to get to that?
I don't even know what that is, but okay.
Anyway. On the Alex Jones show last week, somebody said that there's a secret Mars colony and that they're sending children up there to be sex slaves for the Mars colony. That the guy who's got press credentials to the White House.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. It's the world I live in now, so that's great.
Anyway, so back to healthcare. So then some people started to float, oh, we'll just repeal it now. And then a few people, yeah, we could do that. And it was like, Mitch McConnell's like, no fucking
no,
way.
No,
no. No and no. We need a replacement plan. Because he understands how politically disastrous that would be. And I don't see how they're going to get there, but don't rule out that they'll get there.
Right.
That they will.
Completely agree.
That they'll cook the books in some way, that they'll get maybe an ambiguous CBO score, or maybe only 15 million get kicked off, and then something about the premiums won't go as high as they thought. And then, don't let your guard down for a second.
Nope. Absolutely.
They're
going to do this. They're going
to try
every goddamn effort to do this.
Yeah.
And the only thing that's going to stop them from doing it is massive public backlash, outcry, and reach out every single goddamn day.
Yeah.
Not to kill people.
Right.
Which
I don't trust any. I don't trust Murkowski.
Nope.
I don't trust Collins. I don't trust Heller.
This is not a no-go. This
is
not
Capito.
A thing that's over. It's not. They want this because they don't give a shit about you or me or anyone else. And it's political and they don't understand and they don't care about the ramifications. They just want the political win, which it's not going to be. It'll be a political loss. But I don't want the fucking win politically. I want the win for the health care of the American people. So I would rather them.
McConnell said something really interesting. And there's all kinds of people are trying to figure out what he meant by it. He said in the last couple days, well, you know, if we can't get this done, I guess we'll have to work with Democrats and fix the exchanges. And he was like, whoa, wait a minute.
Can we do that, please?
Can we, like, that's what everybody wants to do.
Can we do that, please?
But I tend to more take a more cynical view at it.
Yeah.
It was, I think it, that was his sort of message to
signaling to other Republicans, to say, if you don't get this done, we're going to have to fucking stay with Obamacare.
We're going to be over a barrel and we're going to be forced to say, yeah, okay, we were wrong. Obamacare works, and now we're fixing Obamacare. Have fun taking that to your constituents and to mm-hmm. your primary opponents.
That's right.
And so, yeah, I don't think it was a kumbaya olive branch to
I don't
fix healthcare.
No, I think it was a poke, a big, hey.
Hey, we better get our shit together.
You want me
here.
To do this? This is what you want?
Yeah.
You want to fix Obamacare
you
and admit that
next,
we were wrong?
You want to stand next to Chuck Schumer?
You
want to
stand
about...
next to Nancy Pelosi and talk about how we all work together to make Obamacare great again?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Fucking vote for this, so that's what we're doing.
Yeah. Figure this shit out.
It was a big threat. Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. So in our home state, I just want to make a note really quick that we had some goddamn American heroes. And there's a nationwide group of disability activists called ADAPT.
Mm-hmm.
And a local rap group and activist group called Wheelchair Sports Camp.
Yeah.
And some of these people went into Cory Gardner's office and they staged what they called a die-in
mm-hmm.
For 57 hours before being arrested and removed, where they just sat and waited to talk to Cory about healthcare and how they would be dead if he does this. And Cory Gardner's in a swing state. He's a person who is a prime candidate for persuasion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's not going to be persuaded.
No, he's a hack. He's the absolute worst.
Right. But he's in a swing state. And if he votes for this healthcare bill, we will take his ass out. We're going to take his ass out anyway. But
he's more afraid right now of being primaried.
Yeah. So he did not meet with them. He sent an aide. People from all over the country, this got nationwide attention, were sending pizza and food and water and provisions.
Cory Gardner really is the worst about meeting with his constituents. I mean, we joke about it on Twitter and we have the Where's Cory stickers.
But he legitimately hasn't held a town hall since Trump's inauguration.
No, he will not talk to anybody.
He will not talk to his constituents. He will go to things... events.
Well, he goes to events
closed,
with business leaders.
If they're closed
and
events that are
people.
Ticketed only and you aren't, there's not, the public's not allowed in or around. He didn't go to the goddamn 4th of July parade. What kind of politician doesn't go to the 4th of July parade?
One that knows he's going to be ambushed by angry constituents. And
we are his
that.
Fucking voters. Like, you can ignore, he's doing this weird tactic of like, if I just ignore it, it will go away. But he's just making it worse.
Well, he's a wuss. Let's get down to it. Like, personally, the guy can't face critics.
Right.
He can't.
He makes YouTube videos and posts them on Facebook about his opinions, but he won't actually talk to the people that voted for him or didn't vote for him or that he's supposedly representing. I mean, we live in a representative democracy.
Yeah.
We vote for people to represent us back at home
yeah.
so that everybody doesn't have to go to Washington and vote.
And he would meet with these small groups of Chamber of Commerce people and business leaders or whatever and say, hey, look, I'm doing all these things, guys. Look, here I am.
Yeah, exactly.
And he will not meet with constituents, period.
They literally sat in his office for 57 hours. One woman had to be removed because she removed herself because mm-hmm. they couldn't recharge her ventilator.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then this happened during this protest. one of the women, the officers came and she's in a wheelchair. And her wheelchair is very complicated. And she refused to show them how it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And so they charged her with... impeding, like basically trying to fuck with police,
right?
Because she would not actively
interfering
help
in police business
with her own
whatever.
Arrest.
Yeah.
They couldn't figure out how it worked. She said, "Why don't you Google it?" And they literally, like, they called in people from Denver Health to see if they could figure out how it worked. It took hours. They couldn't figure out how it works. So eventually they just, like, disabled the thing. They fucked with her ventilator. She has a trach. She's a tracheotomy, and they were trying to mess with that, and they couldn't figure. I mean, they, like, she's gonna sue. It's ridiculous. The ACLU has come out and said, like, this is absolutely absurd.
Now, local law enforcement is always the best with PR, aren't they? It's just heavy-handed Gestapo shit.
And Denver PD is pretty great, but, like,
that's not. Bag.
Yeah, but you know.
Compared to, like, Chicago or...
Right. Yeah. Like, they did call in Denver Health to be like, how does this woman's wheelchair work? And then they charged her with the thing that they're going to fucking drop and she's going to sue and it's going to be horrifying, but...
Sure, but we're so mad that someone's telling us, someone's refusing us that we're going
to... She's supposed to help in her own arrest?
We're going to act like SS troops and damn the consequences because that's the police way.
Yeah. So they eventually, they took her to jail and then they released her because they didn't think that they could actually, like, keep her alive on their own.
Yeah.
Because they could not.
Which doesn't always stop.
No.
Cops from doing that shit.
It does not. But I think they understood the PR of this. And they were
Not really.
We can't arrest a protester and then have her die in police custody because we couldn't care for her medically.
It's like 80 to 90% of cops are type A assholes and they just, you know. Mm-hmm. If you refuse what they say, you know.
Oh boy.
Fuck the PR, fuck everything else.
Yeah.
You know, we will drag grandma by the hair off her ventilator and.
Yeah. That's, I mean, they literally like.
And maybe I'll get suspended for a week with pay, but whatever.
But yeah, who cares? Yeah. It's fine. So yeah, that made national news. These are heroes. I'm just so proud of
them. And great look for Cory Gardner again.
Yeah, and then there was a giant protest in Skyline Park on, I think it was Thursday. A bunch of Democratic state legislators went down there. Kaylee from Wheelchair Sports Camp did a rap that was just fucking epic and amazing. One of the lines was, if there's a stairway to heaven, how are we supposed to get there? Because, you know, wheelchairs.
Yeah. Well, Cory Gardner's in a world of shit. He won fairly easily in 2014, which was a dismal turnout year for Democrats.
Yes.
Nobody showed up.
Everybody
nobody
felt
cared.
Safe and comfortable and happy, and nobody cared.
Nobody gave a shit. I had just moved here. And I was like, oh, my God, this Gardner guy's a nightmare. You know, oh, God, we got to make sure Udall gets reelected. We got our clocks cleaned in 2014 here, specifically in Colorado.
Yes, we did.
A poll just came out, and I think Gardner's at like 35% approval.
Really?
58% disapprove.
Nice.
Oh, no. Everybody's pissed off at him.
Well, yeah. I mean, you just, you know, like I said, you can only get away with it for so long.
No. Yeah. And especially Colorado's a place where, it's pretty partisan, but if you hide, that pisses everybody off.
No, you can't do that.
That pisses all but the hardest, hardcore, like the right-leaning independent types, and we have a lot of those
30%.
Here. 30%. You can't get away with that with them.
30% independents.
No.
And
not talk.
No.
No.
And those 30% independents that we have in Colorado do not want this healthcare bill.
No.
They do not want it.
No, we have fucking the exchanges here, and the exchanges here have worked very well.
We have
now,
done
there have been some problems. We've lost a couple. Premiums have crept up.
But less so than before Obamacare.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the thing, this narrative of like, premiums keep rising. Yes, they've always kept rising. That's
They've
just the nature of fucking premiums,
pace.
But way, way slower. Yeah. And Colorado did a really exceptional job with state exchanges. We started really early, and we have a really good system.
And we have Medicaid expansion.
We have Medicaid expansion. We have a lot, like Colorado's healthcare system.
It's not perfect. There's a lot of problems.
I agreed, but we're doing okay.
Yeah.
Most people are pretty okay. Mm-hmm. We don't want
the
this.
Mental health system is still horribly lacking. But you could say that about every major city in the country.
Also, though, post the Aurora shooting and post some, because Colorado has a problem with mass shootings.
Oh yes,
it's a big
gun state here.
We're like known for that.
Lots of accidental shootings.
We have Columbine and we have the Aurora Theater shooting and
we have the Colorado Springs shooting.
Yeah, we have the Planned Parenthood shoot. Like we're kind of known for it, and it's really shitty. So Hick and the Democrats got together, and I think it was 2015, did a big mental health thing. We have like an 800 line now that you can call 24/7, like a helpline. They expanded the number of beds. Didn't go out to the rural community as much as it should have. It has not. The rollout, like the idea was good. The rollout hasn't been as effective as it should be, and it's certainly not enough.
No, not even close.
And we have some personal experience with how ineffective it has been in Denver. And yeah, but you know, it's not Kansas.
Yeah. Well, back to the health bill for a second. So here's the bottom line. Like any version of this bill right now has come out with the fact that immediately, not like after the 2019 elections, whatever, immediately, you're talking about tens of millions of people instantly losing their coverage, immediate skyrocketing in premiums.
Yep.
Like this is before the next set of elections in November of next year, we're talking.
Yes.
And I just don't see how they get 50 to vote on that. I don't know how they pull this rabbit out of the hat, but don't doubt it, because remember, the House bill was dead, and then they put together a monstrosity and passed it somehow.
Yep.
So
no reason to believe the Senate won't do the same.
Don't believe when it looks like it's dead in the water, McConnell doesn't pull a rabbit out of his ass.
Don't get complacent.
Absolutely do not. Do not. And it's going to come down to weighing the argument that's going to be made is, okay, yeah, it's going to be a disaster. You're going to take all kinds of heat. There's going to be the town halls and the backlash is going to be like you wouldn't believe. Things are going to be ugly. You're going to have to lay low. For the general election, for some of you guys, yeah, it could be rough, but let me put it this way. Good luck talking to your constituents and have fun standing up on that primary debate stage when you had to stand next to Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and say, these are the fixes we just made to Obamacare.
Yeah, Obamacare is better than what our
good
idea
luck.
Was.
Good luck.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be a pretty good motivating factor for some, not all. I
don't think it's – I think it's a good motivating factor. I think you're right. I think they're wrong. I think under Obama, people were angry and Obamacare sucks and da-da-da-da-da. And then we got Republicans in office and they started talking about undoing Obamacare, and talking about undoing Obamacare required talking about what Obamacare was.
Mm-hmm.
And people started to go, wait. What? You're not – don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do – wait. That's Obamacare? No, well, no. I'm
people
good.
People still don't understand though, Rachel.
I know, but a lot more people do. A lot more people do now
but
than –
But literally the other day on NPR, I heard the story. They were interviewing people in Podunk, Kansas. Like, what do you think of Obamacare? Oh, I hate Obamacare. What do you think of ACA? Oh, I love ACA. They better not touch that. But I hope they repeal Obamacare. It's like people still don't
– Right.
Know
but
what's going on.
I don't think running this – I think that the days of running on repealing Obamacare are over. I think that the people have woke up a little bit and said, okay, don't touch the healthcare system. Whatever you're doing, stop. Stop doing that. Like, no. Stop it. That affects me in West Virginia. That affects me in Kansas. That affects me. I don't do that. What are you doing? What are you talking about? And so I think that this idea that next year people saying, oh, well, I didn't repeal Obamacare is going to be a big thing. I don't think anybody gives a shit anymore. I don't think that's a thing you can run on anymore. I don't. I think they're going to try
for 7 years.
But that's because Obama was the president. He's not. Now it's the garbage nightmare that we're living in.
And some people are putting two and two together and saying, wait a minute, we've got all of Congress and the White House, and you've promised you're going to do this. Now
I don't
you
think,
can't?
No, I don't think. I don't. I think that's a narrative of the Republican Party, and I don't think it is a narrative amongst most people. Given the nature of the polls, 15% of the people that
approve,
are polled
yeah.
approve this. They don't
well,
want this. This is not a thing that they want.
I know. And that's where, like, if they could only figure out a way, and if they pulled Democrats aside and said, look, we'll fix the exchanges, but can we call it like Trump care?
Can we call it something else?
It's like,
fine.
No. But, well, first of all, I don't know that they'd get away with it because it would be reported as what it is. I mean, spin it
hopefully.
All you want. And then the Democrats will just wait for everything and be like, yeah, we fixed the exchanges.
Yeah, we just made improvements to Obamacare.
I don't know
care.
That that's
Thanks.
Possible.
No.
I mean, I'm sure someone's thought of it.
Yeah.
I'm sure, you know, Mitch McConnell's aides have reached out and said, why don't we do this and call it that? You know?
Yeah, can we just fake it? Because we're really fucked here. The Democrats are like, no. We'll help you fix it.
Yeah.
We have
totally.
All, literally Hillary Clinton pointed to her website of all the ideas of how to make it better. We can do that.
Mm-hmm.
We can literally cover more people for less money. We can do that.
Yeah,
we have a literal, she had a goddamn binder, Travis. She had a fucking binder of ideas.
Binders full of ideas? Not full of women?
No, full of ideas about policy, specific things to fix.
Yeah, but Wall Street speech.
Mm-hmm.
no fly zone.
Benghazi.
Once she said something about super predators.
Yep.
So.
In the 90s. So. We don't have her binder. We have her binder, though. She gave it to us. We just won't use it. So, anyway.
Anyway, I don't know what happens, but it's in bad shape right now. But don't think that they can't whip up something, and it would be awful. And
yeah.
They would just try to stick it out.
So please keep it up. I know you guys have been calling. I know that you've been writing, and I hope you've been protesting. And I'm very thankful, and so have we. And I would just encourage you to continue to do so.
Yeah, I would like
with
to see
full
the,
force.
I would like to see the Democrats at some point, and maybe they're biding their time on this because they hope that Republicans will come groveling. But I would have liked to seen the Democrats
some
say,
leadership.
Hey, wait a minute, we have a plan.
Yep.
Everybody wants to
imagine
fix
that.
The healthcare system. Here's our plan. Here's what it would do. Here's what it would do.
Let's get a CBO score on that.
That means writing a bill. That's complicated.
Why? That's their fucking job. That's their literal job.
Yeah.
Is to write legislation. That's their literal job.
I think it's a little more complicated to get an actual CBO score on it. I think it's a little trickier, but. In any event, we're going to go to a break now. When we come back, we'll talk about Trump's misadventures at the G20 summit and what that means. And
yeah, I've got another story that is just super depressing. But anyway, stick around. We'll see fun stuff too. Don't worry.
We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back to Reverend Testimony. So, you want to jump into the G20 summit, or do you have other stuff you want to get off your chest first?
I have one thing I want to talk about first.
Okay.
Okay. So, this story came up, and it's just the absolute worst. And I want to talk about this because it matters because of this particular person, and it matters in a global context. But I also want to talk about it because... these are the kind of things that when we yell and scream about reproductive rights in this country, we're talking about stuff like this that exists in other countries, and this is the stuff we're trying to protect ourselves from. So, El Salvador yeah. teen rape victim sentenced to 30 years in prison yeah. after having given birth to a stillborn child.
Yeah, I saw this.
A teenage rape victim in El Salvador has been sentenced to 30 years in prison for murder after having a stillbirth. The latest in the long line of failures of justice against pregnant women in Central America. Evelyn Beatrice Hernandez Cruz, 19, from a small rural community in Cuscatlan, sorry if I mispronounced that, eastern El Salvador, was convicted on the grounds that failing to seek antenatal care amounted to murder. She was a high school student. She gave birth into a toilet in April of 2016 after falling ill with acute back and stomach pain. She was 18 at the time. She was in her third trimester, but did not realize that she was pregnant. She had been repeatedly raped by a gang member over several months as part of a forced sexual relationship. Medical experts were able to ascertain whether the fetus died in utero or in the moments after delivery. The female judge accepted the prosecutor's claims that Hernandez failed to seek antenatal care because she did not want the baby and threw him into the toilet intending to kill him. In sentencing, the judge went further and suggested that Hernandez could not have acted alone and that her mother may have also been criminally responsible. According to Marina Herrera, executive director of the Citizens Group for the Decriminalization of Abortion, the verdict was based on prejudices held by the prosecutor and judge. Quote, "The judgment sentencing Evelyn to 30 years in prison shows how, in El Salvador, justice is applied without direct proof, without sufficient evidence that clarifies what a woman has done. El Salvador, one of five countries where abortion is illegal in all circumstances, has imprisoned dozens of mainly poor young women for murder after they suffered obstetric complications."
Yeah, this happens in parts of the world. There's other Central and South American countries where I think similar
Ireland
things. Ireland has started to walk some of that back because of all the bad press and international pressure.
A woman died.
Yeah.
Because she had a dead baby in her body and they would not extract it because
I wrote a blog on that.
They did not want to let her. Mm-hmm. So, first of all, she's going to prison for 30 years because she was gang raped, didn't know she was pregnant, thought that she was sick, gave birth into a toilet, and they call that murder. And can we just recognize her humanity for a minute? She's a fucking human being, and these things happen to her, and no one gives a shit about her. No one gave a shit that she was gang raped. She did not have medical care, and now she's going to prison for 30 years. It's fucking horrifying. And this can happen here. In Pence's America, that's exactly what should happen to her.
Absolutely. There are sitting members of Congress who believe in this sort of thing.
That's right. Yeah. They think this is exactly what we should do. Mm-hmm. So when you see the handmaids protesting and you see the Women's March and all of that, this is the kind of thing that we're trying to prevent from happening in this country.
Yeah.
And it's not like it can't happen.
Oh, it absolutely could.
Yeah. And the maybe future president, depending on how and when Trump goes out, would applaud this and think that this was exactly the way that we should treat women in this country. So.
Well, and let's see what the Supreme Court does over the next few years, because there are cases that are coming down the pike.
Yes. Yep.
That could, if not literally overturn Roe v. Wade, effectively overturn it, depending on certain decisions.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is, we can't take our eye off the ball in terms of reproductive rights, because they are continually under assault.
I know the world is falling down and everything's falling apart, but this is something that, if you don't want this to happen to you or your daughter or your cousin or your niece or any woman that you know or any woman you don't know, frankly, that's why I talk about it all the time, because it really is a thing. The more we devalue women and women's lives and women's health, the more this kind of thing becomes a reality. And I just won't have it.
Neither will I.
So.
And neither should you.
Yeah. Anyway, that's my feminist rant, I guess. But let's talk about the G20.
So Trump is either back or on his way back from the G20 summit.
Let's talk about what that is.
Well, so, it's the 20 top world leaders.
The 19 richest countries in the world plus the European Union.
Right.
They get together and they talk about globalization and trade and climate change. And things that affect the economies of the economy sort of the world, but it's economically driven.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, President Trump got to go. And it was held in Hamburg, Germany. There were massive, massive protests because it was held in a middle of a city. There was, I think, over 100,000 people protesting. It got pretty violent. The police were using tear gas and, you know, high-powered water hoses. I don't know what you call them, fire hoses or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Tanks, all kinds of things.
The protests weren't really about Trump.
Right. That's the thing that people at work were like, oh, look at all the protests against Trump. And I'm like, no.
No, it's not.
It's anti-globalization.
Yes, yes. Anti-World Bank policies.
Yeah. It's the same sort of like World Trade Organization protests in Seattle.
Yes.
Those people. It's sort of anarchists, anti-capitalist, leftist people combined with a weird mix of like, anti-globalists from a different, like, sort of right-wing perspective of, like, we hate refugees, plus, like, a mix of, I don't know, like, libertarians, I guess. Like, it's a very strange bedfellows that protest the G20.
Sure. There's a lot of diverging interests.
But the primary, I would say, people that are there are the anti-globalization, anti-capitalist sort of anarchist leftists.
Mm-hmm.
It happens every time. there's always massive protests. So he got to meet, I mean, there's so much to say. What do you want to start with? Like, he met with Putin.
Well, let's start with he stopped in Poland first, right?
Oh, you want to talk about that?
Yeah.
Okay.
And let's gave a speech that was, most people are not going to hear what we heard in it, but it was
most white people aren't.
It was a white supremacist dog whistle speech.
Correct.
That was, I think, penned verbatim by Stephen Miller and Steve Bannon.
Yeah, I agree. So I'm going to read to you some of it because, oh my God.
So you can hear what we hear.
I literally had a... I'm going to just read it, and then I'll tell you a story about this lady from work. But okay, here's parts of it. Because as the Polish experience reminds us, the defense of the West ultimately rests not only on means, but also on the will of its people to prevail. The fundamental question of our time is whether the West has the will to survive. Do we have the confidence in our values to defend them at any cost? Do we have enough respect for our citizens to protect our borders? Do we have the courage to preserve our civilization in the face of those who would subvert and destroy it? Our freedom and our civilization depend on these bonds of history, culture, and memory. Just as Poland could not be broken, I declare for the world to hear that the West will never, ever be broken, and our values will prevail, our people will survive, thrive, and our civilization will triumph. Let us fight like the Poles, for family, freedom, for country, for God. God bless the Polish people, God bless our allies, and God bless America.
Right. Sounds innocuous on the surface until you think about it a little bit.
Who's our?
What is, quote, Western civilization?
What is Western civilization? What are our values? Who is our people? Who's us? And who's them?
Right.
Right? That's the question. So then we had...
It's also very confusing to use Poland as an analog.
I know. I don't understand where that comes from.
Because
I mean,
in World War II, the attack didn't come from the, quote, East. It came from Europe. And then you're talking about... You could be talking about Russian incursion into
Poland. I mean, Russians
Poland.
Have been trying to take over Poland and have successfully and unsuccessfully done so for millennia because they're
on the doorstep.
Right. And they have the port, the waterway. But it was very odd. So then Sarah Palin tweets out, or her Twitter account tweets out, so she's tweeting out this.
And she still hasn't taken that down, huh?
No.
Jesus.
Trump gives speech to the people of Poland, says 14 words that leave Americans stunned. And this isn't a good way. She's saying this is a good thing that he did. So... Okay, what 14 words did you say? What does that mean? That's weird, right? Mm-hmm. Anybody know what that means? Anybody?
I do.
I saw it and I went, no, she did not just do that. Now, her Twitter account says all tweets from Sarah Palin will be signed SP. This one was not. So this is a staffer or someone who's using her Twitter account.
Right.
So we don't know that Sarah Palin knows what this means. I don't think she's smart enough to. I don't think
she could have taken it down by now. She had to have heard about.
Yeah, I don't, and I don't. But I don't think that she would object to it either.
Well, obviously not if it's still up.
So, 14 words. Let me just tell you, 14 words is a reference to the most popular white supremacist slogan in the world. Quote: "We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children." So, using the phrase 14 words. Especially in reference to that speech, which was clearly about white supremacy, mm-hmm. is a pretty bald on its face, just like, we're not even giving a fuck anymore.
It's not a dog whistle.
We are white supremacists.
It's just a whistle.
And we believe that white people should be always at the top. We believe that white people should be supreme.
And that the white race is being threatened
yes.
right now by something.
Yes. Yes.
So, yeah, there was no, like, misunderstanding possibility because the speech wasn't 14 words. There was no 14-word snippet in there that was
right.
specifically meant anything. But even if there was, it probably would have been white supremacist anyway.
Uh-huh.
So, like, there's no other way to interpret that tweet
no.
than what it is.
Correct.
And if Sarah Palin didn't herself say that, she hasn't... It's now been over 24 hours.
Yes.
She hasn't taken it down.
No. And there has been widespread Twitter outrage about it. So it's not like they don't know.
Yeah.
It's that they literally give no fucks anymore.
And it's gotten very little coverage outside None. In the news or anything.
I haven't heard anything about it in the news.
No.
And that's shocking to me.
It's a little shocking. I'm sure that, like, Matto and Chris Hayes will talk about it on Monday, I would think. But
I don't know.
Right now...
This happened on Friday. Why didn't they talk about it Friday night? Maybe, I don't know. We didn't actually watch Matto Friday night.
No.
Maybe we were wrong. Anyway, so I was talking to this lady I work with, and so I was talking to this woman of color that I work with, and we were talking about the speech and just being like, oh my God, like, it's just so fucking horrifying and very, like, you know, white supremacist. And this nice, very nice, liberal old white lady walks over, and she's like, you guys talking about Trump? Yeah, we're talking about Trump. Did you see what he said? Poland. So, yeah, I saw. What are you upset about? And I said, well, I mean, it's white supremacist on its face. I mean, it's clearly, this is before Sarah Palin, it's clearly like a white supremacist speech. Like, it could be given by David Duke. And she was like, I didn't hear that. And we were like, no, like, look at what it says. And so I'm reading it to her, I'm trying to explain. And she's like, I think that's being really, what did she say? Not hyperbolic, hysterical. I think that's being a little hysterical.
Okay.
And my black friend from work just looked at her and said, I'm telling you that it's racist. And like, we've already had this talk the other lady and there's a whole other thing, but so just hear me. And she was like, okay. I mean, if that's what you say, but I just don't see it. And I'm like, oh my God, how many people didn't see it? So it still, I guess, is dog whistling, because for most non actually racist Americans, it just seems like, yeah, our country and our, you know, our things. Our shared interests. But if you have any knowledge about what that kind of language is, it seems so obvious. So I guess it still is dog whistling.
Well, you are willing to talk about Trump and Putin now?
Yeah.
This has been driving me crazy, and I will explain why.
Please.
The coverage of it is driving me absolutely batshit insane.
Okay. Tell me what happened first, and then tell me.
What happened was Trump and Putin had their little sit-down.
Uh-huh.
It did not include, like, they said it might include these tough Russian skeptical national security people. It didn't. It was just him, them, and Tillerson, and some translators.
Mm-hmm.
And they were supposed to meet for a half hour. Wound up being 2.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
His aides kept shoving Melania
into the room to
say, okay, you know, time's
honey,
up.
It's time.
Yeah.
Melania. That's a weird.
Literally.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
Because his aides didn't want him in the room too long with Putin because they were very worried, for good reason, he was going to give up national security secrets, make a disastrous deal, do something bad.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So they literally, they knew, I guess they figured they wouldn't listen to them. So they sent the wife in, shoved her through the door.
Multiple times.
Go get him. Get him out of there.
Right.
Get him out of there.
Make him stop.
Didn't work.
No.
They just shoot her away.
Go away. Men are talking.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It was like there was something really similar in House of Cards. I think it was with the Secretary of State. He's interrupting Claire and the Russian PM. Being like, okay, hey, guys, you guys have been talking for a long time. Come on.
Yeah.
So, again, all my people who hate House of Cards, like, life is imitating art, guys.
I can tell you, as a person
the most absurd
who
ways,
works with people in power, you, as an aide, should absolutely be able to have a relationship with your boss where when you walk in that room and you give them that look, they listen to you.
Oh, they have no control over him.
But that's bullshit. That's your job. Your job is to walk in the room and give them the look. And if the look doesn't work, you say, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry to bother you, but I need you for a minute. And you pull them the fuck out of the room. That's what you do. And if you can't do that,
they don't have the balls to do that.
Then you're ineffective. You're not good at your job. If you cannot tell, you should have a relationship with him that you know what's best for him. And he knows that you know that. So if you pull him out of the room, wife should not be involved.
Okay, let me just pivot to what's driving me absolutely fucking crazy about this meeting, okay? So first, I'm going to kind of work backwards. You have three or four different versions of what was talked about in terms of Russian meddling and hacking. You have Tillerson said, well, he brought it up, and then some Trump aides said, like, he brought it up forcefully and said no, and they're going to do a joint task force cybersecurity thing, which makes no sense. And then you have Russian the Russians basically saying, oh, no, 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 Putin said we had nothing to do with it, and Trump believed it.
Yeah.
So that is, the, like, all that nonsense is sort of what I now, like, just always anticipate from any sort of Trump meeting with a foreign leader. Like, it's going to be incoherent nonsense, and I'm sure something bad happened.
Yeah.
But here's the point, which is driving me fucking insane. In the days leading up to this, all the talking heads were all like, what Trump really needs to do is bring up that the way they meddled in our election, you can't get away with that, Mr. Putin, and we're going to take a hard line. And I just wanted to slap my forehead and go, what fucking planet are you on?
Yes.
And then there was the debate of, well, will he or won't he, and how forcefully will he? So everybody has now forgotten that Trump and his campaign and associates are under FBI investigation for colluding with the Russians.
That's right.
To hack and
our elections.
Interfere with our elections.
Yes.
So
are we just going to ignore that and pretend like he's a regular president?
Yeah. We're just totally pushing that aside.
It's fine. I'm sure it's fine.
And saying and pretending that that's not a thing that happened. And we're also forgetting that Trump has very non-subtly said on the campaigning trail in interviews, this is great that Russia is hacking, you know.
Why don't you get her 30,000 emails? Yeah, that'd be really great if you did that.
Right.
And then they did.
So, either Trump and or his campaign did collude with the Russians to interfere in our election process.
Which they did, yes.
Or, even if they didn't, Trump was very non-subtly very happy to accept that interference, as were pretty much every other Republican, because it helped them win.
Yes.
So why in a million years would anybody assume that Trump is going to sit down with Putin and wag his finger
and say,
and go, you shouldn't have interfered.
Naughty boy, that's not what we do. You're very naughty. Don't do that again now.
Or we're gonna
do something. I don't know what we have the power to do.
We're gonna cyber attack you. Or like,
right. We're gonna use Obama's plan. We're gonna do a thing. Yo, you're very bad.
What the fuck?
Why are we treating him like these are two separate things? Oh, I know there's this whole Russia thing going on in the U.S., but now he's meeting with Putin. I wonder if he's going to be a president. No, he's not. Okay, so my very favorite comedian on earth is Jen Kirkman, and she wrote this brilliant tweet thread that I'm going to read to you because she's amazing. Here's the thing. Trump isn't really Putin's puppet in the sense that he's unwilling. He doesn't understand why it's bad to lift sanctions. He doesn't have an understanding of world history, and as we've seen, economics. Trump has no allegiance to American laws.
Right.
Trump isn't patriotic. He's opportunistic. He's beholden to Russia for loan payback, but he doesn't care. To him, this is all part of the art of the deal.
Yep.
The narrative that he looks like a submissive idiot is not totally true. He just looks that way anyway. What you see when you see the silly grin is the little unloved boy. Anyway, Trump is even more dangerous than your usual puppet. Puppet implies that perhaps someone is helpless, that maybe they can be turned around. He admires Putin. He's very sick in the head with whatever narcissism disease label we want to give him. He literally doesn't give an F about things the way that we do. So this reportage that he's being played, while it's true, he doesn't care. He doesn't see it that way. Mm-hmm. He thinks this tit-for-tat stuff is businessman stuff. And for you morons who wanted a president who runs America like a business, congrats. It's being run like a business.
A bad one.
Yeah. One, like a Trump failed fucking business.
Yeah, one that just relies on securing huge loans and then not paying the people you owe.
Right.
Or negotiating to pay them less than what they earn.
When he owes them huge loans, but...
Which is also literally...
But he launders money for them, so they don't really care.
Right.
And he can fail all the time, but they'll still give him money because he launders their money, so they don't really care.
No, that's what sort of drove me crazy. It's like and it's the same pundits who do breathlessly report every morsel of the Trump investigation.
Yeah.
Well, now he's going overseas, so we have to put all that aside
and pretend he's the president.
Like he's the president.
Like an actual president.
Like generic Joe president is meeting with our adversary leader. And
what's he going to say?
And what's he going to say?
Trump was being, it's maddening. It is really maddening.
Beyond maddening.
Even MSNBC. I was watching it like at lunch and I'm like, what?
I'm shouting at the TV.
Yeah.
If I hear one more person say, he has to sit there with Putin and tell him that we're not going to stand for the interference in our election. And it's like, dude, what rock have you been living under?
No, this is Trump we're talking about. This is Donald Trump, who's the investigation you've been covering that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Not some other person.
No, it's this.
He didn't become someone else when he got on a plane and flew overseas.
Yeah.
He didn't become the president when he went to the G20.
Maybe you can make that argument if it was just Tillerson or Pence, but not really Pence.
Yeah.
Or somebody, or Nikki Haley.
Maybe, but it's Donald Trump.
Yeah, it's the guy who is under investigation.
Who got pissed
for
on by
collusion.
Russian hookers, and Vladimir Putin has a record of it. It's the guy who.
And who has been helping the Russians launder money through his properties.
What's he going to say?
It really is.
It's crazy. Maddening. It's like, oh, well, we're going to just live in a different world for a minute, and everything will be fine. Don't worry.
Why
can't you just say, oh, this is going to be a disaster? No wonder his aides are trying to get him out of there, because it's Donald Trump.
And I'm hard pressed, because I did watch a decent bit of the cable news leading up to this to see what they were going to say. And maybe one person said at one point, like, geez, you know, I think that in any event, he's just happy they helped hack the election. So I don't think this is going to come up. But 9 out of 10 didn't even mention that.
Yeah.
Didn't even mention the collusion
investigation. It's not part of the story, Travis. It's the G20 story, not the Trump-Russia story.
And we have to pretend he's the president. Because that's how we cover these things.
Yes.
Because that's how we've covered these things for the last 30 years. So we can't pivot.
Yeah,
and
we have to make
him seem... We can't be in this new world.
No.
Where the Russians conspired to get a guy elected, and he may have conspired with them.
Right.
Because that doesn't make any sense.
No, it's too much. It's too crazy.
We can't get that by our editors. I don't either.
I know.
I can't.
I know. So.
And even like the Brookings think tank people and the supposed liberal commentators, like, they're all buying this party line of, this is what Trump should do, and won't he do this?
How hard will he be against? No! No! Stop! Go! Stop! Stop.
So I guess what's encouraging is there wasn't like an immediate announcement, because what I feared was that like Putin or Lavrov, like the second they were done, was going to get up at a podium and say, I'm so glad to announce that the proposed sanctions are all going to be lifted.
Right.
Which still may happen.
Yeah.
Maybe they're smart enough not to just do it quietly and over the next few months, you know?
Well, yeah, I guess Putin probably wouldn't be that stupid. Now, it's interesting, I think we're going to see in the coming days how this meeting plays with the Russian-controlled propaganda media and the Russian people versus the
United
States.
Well, I can tell you right now, because I've been reading some of that.
Oh, yeah.
It already shows that Putin had his way with him.
Yep.
And, I mean, they always spin it like that. I'm used to spin it that way with Obama and with Reagan and everything else. But
in particular with Trump.
Well, sure.
Like what Jen Kirkman was saying. Like, he admires Putin. All Putin has to do in that room is say,
flex.
Like, aren't you the best, Donald? You're just the biggest winner. You're the best. I'm so glad that you're the president.
Now,
and I'm so glad that we have such a good relationship.
What can I do for you?
What can I do for you? And in the meantime, you know, my people are suffering, and you could help them. You could help me, and I would love you for it. Why don't you go ahead and let's lift those sanctions?
Yeah,
let's just be friends.
And by the way, God, that fake news media.
Do you want to be my best friend? Let's be BFFs. Oh my God, we could like go to camp together, and we could braid each other's hair. The hair is not a good thing. We could go riding on horseback.
Yeah.
Shirtless, we could do all that together. But anyway, in the meantime, I need you to do something for me, though. I need you to just because we're best friends. Just do a thing. Just lift them.
Oh yeah,
you lift them and help me, and you know, yeah.
I mean, not tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Maybe like a month from now. Do this small thing.
I'll give you directions. Don't worry about it. You don't have to worry about the details. I'll just give you like. Direction. You just do a couple things for me every couple months. And Donald's used to that because he's mobbed up. So you don't worry about the details.
Melania opens the door.
I'll just
honey,
give you...
it's been too long. Has to go.
Stop it. I'm talking to my BFF. Anyway, I'll just give you like directions every couple months. You do a small thing and then we'll be best friends. And Donald's like, yeah, that sounds great. That's amazing. Can we do the horseback thing though, really? Can we do it? Because that was so much fun. I want to take a picture, but I won't show anybody.
I think you nailed it.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. I also heard, I don't know if this is true, it was on Twitter, so, you know, take it or leave it, but
well, if it's on Twitter,
a reporter said that Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin were, like, doing a photo op, and Vladimir Putin said to him, like, show me which ones are picking on you, to the reporters, pointing to the reporters.
Well, that's not terrifying.
Uh-uh. Because what does Putin do?
He gets journalists and people he doesn't like murdered via
literally
radiation.
Murders journalists.
Or other means.
Mm-hmm. Or jails them.
Yeah.
So him pointing to the American press corps or the international press corps and say, point out to me which ones are picking on you.
That's horrifying.
After their meeting. You think I'm kidding about that BFF shit, but if he said that, that's exactly how that meeting went.
Yeah.
And now I won't let anyone bully you anymore either. I'll take care of it. It's fucking terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
he's no joke.
No.
He's a goddamn mobster. He's a villainous, murdering, mass murdering fuckhead. I mean, that's
KGB agent.
Yeah, he literally is former KGB. Like, that's not a conspiracy theory, that's the facts.
Mm-hmm.
So great.
Yeah, great. It's bad, and even some conservative publications are like, oh, if you think this was good in any way for the United States, you're fucking kidding yourself.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
So we'll see what comes. You're not going to know tomorrow.
No, Putin's not stupid.
No.
He's not going to do anything rashly. He's just going to send little communiques to Trump, here today, do this, here tomorrow, do this, here in a month, do this. It'll all be meticulous and under the radar and hard to detect. And he will do whatever he wants to do, and Donald Trump will go along with it because he doesn't know anything, and he is a buffoon, and he is a horrifying embarrassment, and will probably take down the
and
republic
way in over his head with
yes
this stuff.
Very much so. Yeah, very much so. And Tillerson, great. I'm so glad he was there, because what is he?
He's
a fucking CEO.
Worthless.
Like, what?
An oil guy.
He's an oil guy. I'm sure he knows everything about foreign policy.
This morning, Nikki Haley went on CNN, which, why is she on CNN? I thought CNN was fake news.
I thought he was beating them up in the thing.
Anyway, Nikki Haley went on CNN and said, Trump was very forceful about the yes, we all know Russia did interfere with the election. Well, Trump still has not.
No.
Because one of the things that Poland, I think, or Hamburg, he's got to say, yeah, well, it was Russians, but it was also other countries, but we don't really know who did it, and it was just gobbledygook.
Yeah.
And then Nikki Haley said, oh, no, yeah, it was the Russians, and Trump was very forceful and said, no, Vladimir, you cannot.
Yeah, I did wag my finger. He did wag his finger. I was not in the room. But Melania told me that one time she was in there, before they waved her off because they're BFFs, that he did have his finger out wagging, but it could have also been being like, winking a gun. We don't know, but we're going to say he's forceful.
She's awful, by the way.
Oh, my gosh.
Have you seen her speak at the UN?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's bad.
Yep. She doesn't know. But these are not serious
people.
Yeah,
who besides McMaster?
No one.
And maybe Mattis. Do you have a little bit of confidence in?
None. Zero.
In this cabinet or this
None.
Administration?
Not a single one. They all were appointed because they hate the departments that they're leading.
Oh, you want to talk about Rick Perry's Economics 101?
Oh my God, do it. Do it. Tell the story. This is the best thing
How
ever.
This man got into politics is just beyond belief.
Texas, I guess.
And why he just won't go away and how he keeps failing upward. Is quite amazing.
So, Rick Perry.
Rick Perry was speaking to a group of coal miners or coal executives or some coal that are still under the illusion that Trump is going to save coal somehow, even though coal is dying because it's just not financially viable anymore. Forget environmental. So they're like, well, how right now we have this glut of supply that I think that was the question or the topic. Like, we have this glut of supply and prices are really low, and how do we sell it? How are you going to help us?
Yeah.
And Rick Perry, in his infinite wisdom, says, well, it's basic supply and demand. When you put the supply out there, then the demand follows.
Oh my God.
And the world literally was like, no.
Nope.
That's literally.
It's the opposite.
That's literally
backwards.
No, see, backwards.
That's not how.
When there's an excess of supply.
No.
And not enough
When we
demand,
say supply and demand, I guess I assumed that the person in charge of things would know what that means, because I know what it means. I think we all assume everyone knows the laws of supply and demand.
Well, it can get a little more complicated, but
it's much more complicated, of course.
Yeah, but on the broad sense, it's the basic understanding of
what it means,
right?
Is when supply is really high.
All right, let me explain it this way. Let's say you own a widget store, and you're selling widgets at $2.99 a piece.
Yeah.
And they're flying off the shelves. You can't keep them on the shelves.
Yeah.
The trucks can't deliver the widgets fast enough to you wholesale for you to turn around and sell them.
Yeah.
The demand is up.
Right.
The supply
is down. The demand
is
why they're being sold. Like, people want them.
Right. So
much that you can't keep them in stock. So what do you do?
Well, at a certain point, you're like, well, let me sell them for $4.99.
Uh-huh.
And they're still flying off the shelves.
Right. Some people can't afford $4.99 or don't want them for $4.99. They'll buy it for $2.99, but they're still flying off the shelves because.
Yeah.
So then what?
So, but the demand is doing what to the supply?
It's making it more expensive.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, right.
Now let's say, across the street, another widget store opens and another.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, everybody's got the fucking widgets.
Right. Now there's a ton of widgets, which is supplying, the supply is the widgets.
Right, and the store across the street is now charging, you were charging $3.99, they're charging $3.50.
Right. Okay. So people are going to go over there. So then, I got to lower my price to like $3.20.
Right.
And then it's become, that's
so now
the
there's a glut of supply, what happens to the demand?
It goes down.
This is not hard to understand.
So when the supply is high, the demand does not follow. That's not how it works.
It's a little more complicated than that because the demand can be its own thing, regardless of the supply.
Yes.
But generally speaking, supply and demand is an inverse phenomenon.
Right. And it's kind of bullshit, but them saying we have too much coal and we don't know what to do or whatever, and him saying like, the market, it'll be fine.
You put the supply out there.
And then the demand will exist. No.
That's not how it works.
No.
Think about farmers. If you've ever looked at... Nobody looks at farming economy because it's boring as sawdust.
Mm-hmm.
But there's an interesting phenomenon. Whatever your crop is, when you have a bumper crop, that means like, oh shit, we grew a shit ton of soybeans this season. Chances are if you did, so did all the other soybean farms everywhere. And people assume, oh, you got a great bumper crop. That's great. You're going to sell all these soybeans. No, it's actually pretty bad.
Yeah.
Because that means there's a glut of supply. The demand
is the same.
Is the same. So the prices naturally get pushed down.
That's like when you go to King Soopers. And it's really weird that blackberries are like 50 cents.
Right.
Right?
Well, their produce prices fluctuate crazily.
Yes. But isn't that sort of part of it? Like sometimes blackberries are $5
mm-hmm.
and sometimes they're 50 cents.
Right.
That's not because they just decided to give you a good deal. They're like, you know what? Let's just charge people less today.
Oh, we gotta get rid of
them. It's because they have too many goddamn blackberries and they need to get rid of them. And the farmers get paid way fucking less because they had too much.
Yes.
So we pay less, mm-hmm. but that's not because the store was like, you know what, you guys? Let's just
You've
be really
it.
Nice to our customers. They've earned it. Let's just sell these. Let's just lose money on these. No. The farmers were like, holy shit, these are going to spoil.
Get them.
I have way too much. Just fucking take them.
Get rid of them.
We'll take pennies on the dollar. The store then charges us less because they now have too many of them and they don't want to throw them out. So they charge us 50 cents.
Right.
When blackberries aren't in season or people didn't grow them, they charge us $5 because if you really want blackberries, we only have like 12 of them.
So the Secretary of Energy doesn't understand the basics of supply and demand.
Correct.
This is important.
Yeah. It's funny, but it's not.
It's terrifying.
It's awful.
Especially when energy is such a dicey, fragile ecosystem.
Yes.
You know, not to mention climate change and everything else, but...
Just the basic... I mean, it's not like we didn't know he was a fucking moron, but...
Well, even Trump would make fun of him for being a moron, and then he hired him because he's a bootlicker.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I made all these insults at you, and you're still kissing my ass. You get a job.
Sure. What do you hate? You were trying to get rid of that department, right? Lead it.
Yeah.
Good old boy.
And then Ben Carson on HUD. So there we are. It's a shit show. It's a disaster. It's embarrassing. And
the other thing before we get done with that, so the G20 is 20 or 19 richest countries plus the EU.
Uh-huh.
So the G19, which is now the 18 richest countries plus the EU, mm-hmm. just came out together to support climate change.
Yes. And said the Paris Accords are not going anywhere.
Nope,
it's not reversible.
We're not renegotiating.
No.
And they just left Trump out of it. They just said, the U.S. doesn't want to play ball. That's fine. But we're going to talk about this. And we are all united.
It's not that new. The U.S. and one or two other countries did the same thing with Kyoto.
Yeah.
Back in, I don't forget when it was.
Yeah.
But
Bush.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Those Republicans, man, they just really want dirty air and bad water and, you know, it's fine.
So with the healthcare stuff and the G20 just happening, the Russia investigation has gotten pushed way to the back pages.
Yes.
But I expect it to pick back up next week.
I think that's okay. Like we said last week, you know, this healthcare stuff is, that's your action item.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, don't worry about, like, the Russia stuff's not going away. Mueller's doing his job. He's continuing to hire more attorneys, top attorneys. He's sort of cherry-picking them out of big law firms.
He hasn't raided your firm yet.
And,
He hasn't raided your firm yet.
No, not yet. but he is. He's cherry-picking them out of big firms and out of prosecutors and mm-hmm. a lot of other places to investigate this stuff. And it's interesting. I follow a lot of this law stuff for work, and the National Law Journal is something that I follow a lot. And it's really interesting because they always report on it because, like, they're just a bunch of lawyers. And it's interesting to watch who he picks and what their background is
mm-hmm.
as sort of a way to follow where he thinks the investigation is going.
Right, or where we assume
it is, because why would you hire that person if
right.
not we're trying to go down that path? And it seems to me, and I'm a novice, but it seems to me that it's definitely going toward
financial.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Which is not surprising.
Not at all.
Follow the money.
Follow the fucking money.
Is always...
Yes. And I think that's what he's the most afraid of. I mean, he won't release his tax returns. There's a reason for that.
Yeah.
It's not because he's being indignant or he doesn't think he has to, or it's because he's under audit, if you want to believe that bullshit.
And he has all these shell companies, these Russian shell companies, buying up all these, or leasing these Trump properties.
Yes. Yeah. And yes. 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 There's more stuff about Kushner that's been coming out, about this big loan that he did not disclose,
mm-hmm.
Which has Russian ties, of course.
Of course.
Deutsche Bank, this giant loan that he's a personal guarantor on, and he did not disclose it. And his attorney came out and said, well, technically he doesn't have to disclose it. And then the guy from the ethics office who resigned.
Resigned, that's right.
Came out and, well, so that's a whole other story. The guy from the ethics office resigning, he's like become like a weird cult hero. And nobody ever knew what that office even worried about or was.
Like
but, but he, yeah, they came out and said, well, I guess technically that's true, but if you had asked us, we would have told you you absolutely should disclose that because a $250 million loan that you're a personal guarantor on is...
A potential conflict of interest.
especially with a Russian bank. I don't know. Maybe you might have mentioned it.
Yeah, if anything mattered or anybody cared anymore.
Uh-huh.
I mean, a few people do, but...
Well, Mueller's going to figure it out.
Yeah. Congress doesn't.
No, Congress doesn't give a shit.
No.
No.
Emoluments. Fuck it. Conflicts of interest. Speaking of which, Tom Price, it was just revealed today that Tom Price also left something very important out. Another potential conflict of interest. Forget his stock trading.
Right.
Crap.
Right. He's the Secretary of Health and Human mm-hmm. Services. Is that right?
HHS.
Yep.
Leading the way on the Obamacare repeal efforts, sort of. Got a couple minutes left. North Korea, tensions are high with North Korea.
Oh my God,
there's a lot
yeah.
of bluster and bravado, and nothing's probably going to happen because I don't
think... So they launched an ICBM, which is an intercontinental ballistic missile, and, you know, it didn't hit anything or do anything.
It was a test, yeah.
They proved that they could do that, and that's the sort of first time that that's happened, that it wasn't just an epic disaster.
Well, Trump...
And there's been a lot of people and a lot of... But you just said bluster and bravado with the
Well, Trump has boxed himself in, right?
Yeah.
He got up and said at the G20, I don't do red lines. Red lines are too...
pussy, basically.
No, not pussy. He said they're too constraining and I'm a great diplomat and whatever bullshit. But he did draw a red line. He said, you know, North Korea cannot be allowed to be a nuclear power. And they basically are at this point. So
And then he said, why doesn't China and Japan care about this? And you're like, oh my God, have you talked to them? They do. Maybe, like, I don't know, get them on the phone and don't get distracted by a pretty reporter in the meantime and listen to what they have to say.
Let me put it this way. This is not the best analogy. We only have a couple minutes left, but let's pretend that Mexico had a tyrannical right-wing ruler in charge, and they were threatening their Central American neighbors, and they were a little nutty, and they were a big pain in the ass for us.
Yeah, just stick North Korea and Mexico.
But let's pretend if that regime became unstable, and it fell, and there was a huge power vacuum with all that weaponry and those people. Would that be in our interest to just kind of let that happen?
No.
Or undermine that regime?
No.
No. Which is the exact reason China is not going to undermine Kim Jong-un or that regime.
Yeah. It's a more complicated issue for a different day.
Yes. Much, much more complicated.
Yes.
But in any event, okay. So that's going to wrap it up for us. We'll be back next week. Might have some more clarity on the healthcare bill. There might be some new news. Who knows? There's always news.
We don't have a goddamn crystal ball, so we don't know. But we'll see.
MSNBC has a crystal ball.
Apparently. Well, that's literally.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Reverendtestimony@gmail.com, @ReverendDuo on Twitter. Stay active. Stay tuned. Stay involved. Adios.